Last time, we had given a rule. We said, "Ein onshin min hadin and ein mazhirin min hadin." Ein onshin min hadin. Remember that we said that in general, a person will not be punished for wrongdoing unless the Torah provides an onesh and an azhara, meaning it has to tell you what the punishment is, and it also has to tell you that the act is usur, that you're not allowed to do it. And the reason for that is, lest somebody say, well, maybe there's a price to pay for doing it, but that doesn't mean God doesn't want you to do it. It just means you want to do X, then you have to pay whatever it is. That was one rule. But what we saw last time was that you don't deduce a penalty from a kal v'chomer. Meaning, even if I see in the Torah that for act X you get this punishment, if the Torah doesn't say that for act Y you get a punishment, I can't deduce it and say, well, this act is worse than that act, and therefore, you know, how much more so? It doesn't work that way. We also said that you can't have an azhara from the din, from a kal v'chomer either. You can't understand that because this is usur, therefore that is usur. So the example that we gave was to say, the Torah says specifically that a man is not allowed to be with his maternal sister or his paternal sister. And I needed a pasuk to teach me that he also can't be with his full sister. That's also prohibited. Even though I would have assumed, since he can't be with half, why should he be able to be with whole? Nonetheless, you can't do it from a kal v'chomer. So Ira asked, why not? So the answer I thought was intuitive, but I wanted to look it up. And I found it in the Halichos Olam, where he gives, indeed, that answer, which is, Mipnei shekal v'chomer nitam lidarish me'atzmo. I didn't put it on the sheet. I only remembered your question after I made the sheet, so it's not on the sheet. But it's in Halichos Olam, Shah Ravi, Perek Beis, Osiyud Beis. I can give you this afterwards, that actually has it. But what he says is, you're allowed to make up a kal v'chomer yourself. Meaning, out of all the methods that we have for analyzing psukim, and you think of like Gezeira Shava and Binyan Av and Klalu Prat and all of those, the only one that you have free reign on, like I can make up a kal v'chomer, you can make up a kal v'chomer, whatever, that's the only one where you can do that. Where you can say legitimately, this is, let's say, a bad thing, that is worse, therefore, you know, it must be given at least, you know, that kind of an approach, that kal v'chomer type of an approach. If this is appropriate to do, how much more so this is appropriate to do? That's subject to human logic. And because it's subject to human logic, we don't want Beis Din acting on it. Because you come up with your logic, and I come up with my logic. And who's to say who's right? Yeah, that's one of the major points that the Kuzari makes, is that you can be working with the same data as somebody else and come to an entirely different conclusion. The Kuzari uses that to make the point that you always need a Masora. You always need a tradition about what truth is. Because if it's just what you came up with out of what you saw, someone else sees the same thing that you see and comes up with a different conclusion. I forget which philosopher it was. I want to say it's William James, who said, the only thing that philosophers can be trusted to do is to disagree with other philosophers. That's just the way it is. So that's why you can't do an onesh or an azara from a kal v'chomer.
Even if it's irrefutable?
You think it's irrefutable. Then someone comes along and refutes it. You know, we always think our logic is irrefutable. Who doesn't think their logic is irrefutable?
We should never be able to learn any kal.
Well, that's the thing. So you can, but not something that's going to have real-world stakes for somebody else. That's what we're saying. Yeah, you can have the Halichos Olam. I can autograph for you later. Okay. But going back into the Gemara, we had said that the Eid Zomim only gets punished in the event that he succeeded in getting the defendant to the point of Gemar Din. He got the court to say, this is the penalty that's supposed to be carried out, but the penalty was not actually carried out. And the Tzdukim, we said, disagreed and said, no, you actually have to have carried it out. If it wasn't carried out, if they caught the guy before he could carry it, before the Beis Din carried it out, then they said there's no penalty. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai did something, and we started talking about this last time, but we decided that this isn't a story you can rush. This needs explanation. So you're looking at Hayom and Beis. We're about 15, 20 lines up from the bottom. The words are Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai in the middle of the line. About 20 lines up from the bottom. You see it? Okay. Tanya. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai said, Erev ben Nechama. Erev ben Nechama is some kind of an exclamation, which Rashi offers two explanations for. Either he's swearing that if the following is not true, he will not merit to see the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Erev ben Nechama, I should see consolation, meaning the Beis HaMikdash, or, much, much more dark, he will see the consolation of the loss of his children if the following is not true. Like swearing by the lives of his kids, which generally we don't approve of. But he says, Im lo haragti eid zomeim lahotzi mi liban shel tzedukim. He says, you know what I did? I killed an eid zomeim in order to show the tzedukim are wrong. Shayu omrim ein ha'edim zomeim min neharagin ad sheye harag hanidon. Because they used to say that you don't kill the eid zomeim unless they actually succeeded in executing their target. If they didn't succeed, then no. And I killed him in order to show that that's not true.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Like, why would that even be proof to them? I mean, why would they believe, in other words, they don't believe in what you believe in.
Right. So he doesn't mean proof in the sense of evidence. He means, I was showing them this is what we do. Not only is it just like hypothetical, like, this is what we do. But the problem that I thought you were going to ask was a much more fundamental problem, which is, was the guy guilty or wasn't the guy guilty? Either the guy deserved death, in which case you're not killing him because of the tzedukim, you're killing him because he's supposed to die, right? Or he doesn't deserve to die, in which case what did you exactly prove to the tzedukim? Like, we can kill innocent people. I got you. What was Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai doing? What was the case? What are we talking about? So the Aruch Lener asks that question, and he offers two answers, which I brought on the sheet. Jumping the first two lines in the Aruch Lener, because that's just framing the question. He first says, V'yesh lomar, he says, you could say, Al pi ma shehiksha haritva. He says, look at the Ritva's question. Eich ira masa kazeh la'oso tzadik, halayuna la tzadik kol avon, or kol on, I should say. He says, we have a separate problem, which we're going to come back to, which the Ritva asked, which is, we have a basic principle in the Gemara, that if somebody is truly a tzaddik, Hashem will not allow him to make a mistake. Hashem's going to safeguard him from making mistakes, which is a wild idea. Infallibility is not something we usually associate with our religion. There are other religions that have claimed that. But you'll see more about that. We'll talk more about
that. The rabbi on the airplane.
With the sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. That's going to come into this also. So he says, Vitire. So the Ritva answered, Sha'oso aid belav hachi kvar ha'echayev misa. What happens is, see, the problem is that the Aruch Lener is operating with the end of the story. So I have to tell you the end of the story. This doesn't make any sense. The next line in the Gemara is going to be Shimon ben Shetach saying to Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, you should know what you did was terrible. You killed somebody who didn't deserve to die. That's Shimon ben Shetach's response. And then we find out what happens to Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai as a result. But the point is, he did something that was wrong, in fact. So the Ritva asked, how could he come to kill somebody inappropriately? How could that be? Why didn't God stop it? So the Ritva's answer is, Sha'oso eid balam harikvar hayachayev misa. The answer has to be that this guy was actually liable for death for something else. V'hine, kavonas haritva nirish hayachayev lashamayim. He says, what the Ritva means is that this defendant had some reason why God wanted him dead. There was some reason why it was supposed to happen. Ava b'yoser yeshlomar shayachayev misas beis din acheres. But stronger than the Ritva, he says, maybe the deal is, this is a guy who was supposed to be executed by Beis Din for some other crime somewhere else. Kigon shebo edim shechil al Shabbos. Witnesses had come to some other Beis Din and testified he broke Shabbos. V'im kein, and if so, haya Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai yochol lidono al zeh. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai could have sentenced him because of that. Aval bachar ligmor dino al edus de hazama lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim. But he chose not to do it based on what this guy had done that was reported in the other Beis Din, but based on this specific thing, in order to show that Stukim, this is what we do. So in other words, to sum it up, what he's saying is, this guy, we have to name this guy, because we keep calling him Guy. So we're going to call him Levi. Okay, anybody here named Levi? No? Second name Levi? Anybody Levi? Any Levium? No. Okay, So Levi was up in Beis Din on an Eid Zomim charge in front of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai knew that he was actually up for some other capital crime in a different Beis Din. And so he said, this guy is subject to death anyway. I'm going to execute him, claiming that it's because of the Eid Zomim thing, even though the Eid Zomim thing actually wasn't relevant, in order to tell the Stukim, see that? This is what we do. I'm just using this guy. He's going to die anyway, so what's the difference? That's Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai's approach, as explained in the first answer by the Aruch Lener. And Shimon ben Shetach comes along and says, you can't do that. The guy needs to have a verdict against him. And he didn't get a verdict in the other case. He didn't get a verdict in this case. So what'd you do? You killed an innocent man. That's one explanation. The other explanation that he offers is in the last paragraph. He offers a different idea, which is based on a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga talks about Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. Remember that when you learn Pirkei Avos, the opening Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos have the pairs of Talmidei Chachamim, right? Shmaya and Avtalion and Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochi, right? So one is the Nasi, one is the Av Beis Din. The Av Beis Din is, as it sounds, head of the Beis Din. The Nasi is really the political leader, but it's a religious role there as well. As the Aruch Lener tells it in the Gemara in Chagiga, there's a debate as to whether Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai was the Av Beis Din and Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi, or vice versa. That's a debate as to who had which role. So there, as he records it, the Gemara in Chagiga asks, according to the Rabbanan, Desvira Lahud Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai havi Av Beis Din. They think Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai was the Av Beis Din. Mi mora bifnei nasi, would he have paskind when Shimon ben Shetach was present? Shimon ben Shetach as the nasi outranks the Av Beis Din. He wouldn't have done that. Umeshani and the Gemara their answers, no, he would not have done so. And you know what? It's kind of confusing for me to go further with this until you see the Gemara. So maybe we'll come back to this answer after we see the Gemara. Otherwise, it's not going to make any sense. So we'll come back to that after. See the rest of the Gemara first, go through it, and then maybe we come back to that. So let's go back into the Gemara itself. Right now, all we know is that he says, I executed somebody in order to show those tzedukim, this is the way we do it in Beis Din. So Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach says to him, Ere ben Achama, he uses the same phrase, right? I will see the consolation. Im lo shafachta dam naki. If you did not just spill innocent blood by doing that. Shari Amru Chachamim, Ein ha'edim zomen neheragen ad shiazumu shnehem, ve'ein lokin ad shiazumu shnehem. Shimon ben Shetach said, you made a major mistake. What was your mistake? Your mistake was, this was a guy who was, yes, himself an Eid Zomim, but the other partner in his testimony, the other witness, was not incriminated as an Eid Zomim. And we only execute Eidim Zomimin if the full set is found guilty. So he says, you just committed a crime. You killed somebody who was not liable for death. Miad kibel olav Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai she'eno mora hara el lefnei Shimon ben Shetach. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai accepted upon himself he would not paskin halacha unless Shimon ben Shetach was present, because he was afraid of making a mistake. Like, I just killed somebody by mistake. That's a terrible thing. So in order to avoid that in the future, I'm not paskinning unless Shimon ben Shetach is present to say this is the right move. All through the life of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, he used to go throw himself down on the ground by the grave of that witness he killed. And his voice was heard. unclear who is his. That's the point. Ukesvurin ha'am lomar kolo shel harug. Everybody thought it was his victim, that the voice was coming out of the grave complaining about what Rav Yehuda ben Tabbai did. Omar, but he said, koli shalihu. He said to everybody, no, 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 it's my voice. It's me crying over this, doing tshuva for this. Teidu, it is, you know, because lamachar humeis in kolo nishma. He says, when I go, you're not going to hear the voice anymore. So that'll show you it was my voice. It wasn't the voice coming out of the grave. It's me crying. Amar le Rav Acha b'rei de Rava le Rav Ashi. But Rav Acha b'rei de Rava said to Rav Ashi, Dilma bedina kam bahadei. Inami piyusei paisei. He says, the fact that the voice stopped doesn't actually mean that the voice had been Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabbai's voice. Maybe it's because after he died, he went to the next world, there was some kind of a judgment, you know, between them. Or maybe he managed to appease the person he executed, and that's why that person stopped complaining. But you can't prove. The fact that Yehuda ben Tabbai died does not mean that that voice all those years was actually his.
That's the cemetery and watch him.
Right, so Rashi says this must have been going on at night or at some other point. There was an eclipse or something. Nobody could see. Nobody could see what was going on.
What was the time period that they were actually had these courts and were actually executing people?
Second Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. Those Mishnayos of Pirkei Avos are all those generations with the Second Beis HaMikdash there.
It's interesting because there's a low Arab and a Chama there. Not even. In other words, in the Beit Sheni, they recognize that it wasn't a complete.
Right. If you take Arab and Achama, like that approach in Rashi.
Right. The first
approach. Right. If you take the first approach. Right. Although, I think I mentioned this at some point in the last few weeks, there is this idea that they knew that the Chorban was happening. Right. Yeah. We talked about it with Prisbel. We had that. I think it was at Larry's house. But there are a couple of things that are worth noting here. So one thing is the second answer of the Aruch Lener. I'm going to make a long story short with the Aruch Lener rather than go through it inside. But based on the Gemara in Chagiga that he references, he says that normally Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabbai would wait for the Nasi. He would wait for Shimon ben Shatach. And what he did here was to paskin it on his own. That's what that was was odd here. In other words, again, we asked the question: if this guy's liable for death, then what do you mean I did it to show the tzedukim what we do? So either the answer is he was liable for death for some other crime in a different Beis Din, in the mind of Yehuda ben Tabbai. Or alternatively, it was that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabbai didn't wait for Shimon ben Shatach to do this. He did it himself. But the guy was found guilty and based in, and just the mistake was, either way, the mistake was that this was only a single witness, and therefore he shouldn't have done it. Side note, the Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael actually has the opposite edition. Shimon ben Shatach was the one who did it. Not Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabbai. Shimon ben Shatach was the one who executed the guy inappropriately. That is a very interesting thing, because you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin with Shimon ben Shatach where he sees two people. One is running after the other one with a knife to kill him, and they run into a ruin, and there's nobody else in the ruin, and Shimon ben Shatach runs in after him, and he sees the guy who had been holding the knife standing there, and the knife is dripping blood, and the other guy is dead on the ground. And Shimon ben Shatach says, you know, who killed this guy? It was either you or me, and I know it wasn't me. But I can't do anything because Beis Din will only execute if they actually have witnesses to the act, and this is circumstantial evidence. Sorry?
And a warning also.
Well, whether a warning is needed for murder is a good question, because if somebody knows, it's clear he knows, then maybe we don't need the warning. But but my point in bringing it is simply that Shimon ben Shatach there stops short. He says, I can't. You know, I have to follow the rules. In the addition of the story here that Shimon ben Shatach killed somebody not following the rules and then got in trouble for it, you know, those stories become an interesting pair.
There's also only one witness in that case.
Right. And it isn't. He isn't a witness.
He didn't see it, right?
He's not a witness at all. Witness means you have to have seen the event. Yeah. But,
you just said that you don't necessarily need Hasra if he
Correct. No. Right. The Machlokas and the Gemara in Sanhedrin about whether you need Hasra if it's something that everybody knows is Aser. And everybody knows what the penalty is. Right. So generally speaking, with murder, with a couple of things, we tend to think that people know. Yeah. That's the question. The question is, see in the papers.
Why is it wrong? Society decided it was wrong. He told me it was wrong. It's not wrong.
You can make the argument if you like. I'm going to send you the Gemara. I'm going to send you the Gemara. The big question. Yeah, Eitan, you want to move to the side? You could. But the big question on this is the one that the Aruch Lener quoted from the Ritva, which is how does Hashem let him make a mistake like that? We have a Gemara in Chulin, Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, which says that even the animals of tzaddikim, Hashem will not allow them to lead somebody to sin. It's talking about what they would eat, produce that hadn't been properly tithed. Like, how in the world is Hashem going to allow him to kill somebody? This is an issue that comes up in a few different places in Shas. It's not only a problem here. So the Ramban in Chulin offers three answers. I gave you the source on the sheet, but recognizing that we're falling behind, I'm going to say it outside, but I gave it to you there with words bolded that will help if anybody wants to see it inside. First answer is Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam writes in a Tosfos that appears in a couple of places that the protection Hashem provides is specifically regarding eating something that one is not supposed to eat. That's where Hashem will protect you. Because eating something that you're not allowed to eat, eating treif, it's such a degrading thing if somebody does that by accident that Hashem is going to save them from that. But Hashem's not protecting you from all possible mistakes. Right? That's not a thing. That's the comment of Rabbeinu Tam. That's one answer. A second answer comes from Rabbeinu Yehuda Bar Yochar, who's a Rebbe of the Ramban. And he says, Hashem protects people only that they won't cause others to sin. But not that they're not going to make a mistake themselves. The business about the animals of the tzaddikim is them causing somebody else to sin. It's not about sinning themselves. That Hashem doesn't protect you from. Ramban himself says Hashem only protects a person if the avera that they were going to commit was going to be b'shogeg, was going to be by accident. So Hashem keeps you from making mistakes where you were trying to do the right thing. But if you're trying to do something wrong, if Yehuda ben Tabai is trying to do something that's inappropriate, Hashem's not going to save him from that. Hashem's going to keep him from error. That's all. And then you have the Ritva's answer, which is that this guy in the case must have been guilty of something else, and Hashem wanted that person executed, and therefore Yehuda ben Tabai had a redeeming value to it. It's a whole interesting thing because it comes up. There's a classic Gemara in Shabbos, which talks about David HaMelech and David and Bathsheba. And did David do anything wrong with Bathsheba? And they come up with all these technical reasons to explain how you know that, no, David didn't do anything wrong. Really, Uriah had given Bathsheba a get, and he didn't go home again, so therefore he was never with her again. And he was a Morid B'Malchus, he had rebelled against the throne by not listening to David's order, and therefore he deserved to be sent to the front lines. Like, all of these different in and out answers, when the Pasuk says explicitly that Nasan Hanavi comes to David and rebukes him, and David says, Chatasi, I sinned. So David holds he sinned. You hold David didn't sin. What's pshat? It's this. The Psukim say about David, Hashem imo. Hashem is with him. And the Gemara explicitly says, if Hashem is with him, how in the world would he fall into an avera like that? And the answer is, letter of the law, he didn't fall into an avera. Letter of the law, no laws were broken. But what he did was a terrible thing. And therefore, Nasan rebukes him. And therefore, David has to do tshuva. And therefore, David suffers for the rest of Shmuel Bey's. Right? Until his death, David suffers the catastrophic results of what he did to Uriah. Everything that follows from there, the entire blowing up of his family, is a result of what happened with Uriah. So it's not that David you know, was innocent. He's not innocent. He didn't break any laws, letter of the law. The mafia lawyer got him off.
But he only did it because he wanted Bathsheba.
That wasn't a good thing, though.
So you can say letter of the law all you want. The motivation...
No, that's what we're saying. Yeah. It was wrong. It just didn't break a law. Yes, it was wrong. It just didn't break a law. That's all. But let's go back to the sugya now, because there's a lot of Gemara to see. Okay? All right. Also, for reference, next week we're at Kobe, I understand. Did you know that?
Yes.
And then after that, we're going to be off until after Pesach. The following Tuesday night is already the Tuesday night before Pesach. And I'm actually invited to something, but in any case, it's 6 days before and you should be cleaning. And then after that, it's Pesach for a couple of weeks. Okay. All right, Mishnah.
We're not learning on Holy?
It's Motzei Yom
Tov. It's not Motzei. Yeah, Wednesday night.
It's, yeah. Al pi shnayim edim o shlosha edim yumas hames. The pasuk, as quoted here in our Mishnah, is a pasuk which says, via two witnesses or via three witnesses, the dead man will be put to death. The problem with this pasuk is that this pasuk is actually regarding avodah zarah, not regarding eidzomim. It's regarding idolatry. So the Vilna Gaon says, use a different pasuk. Al pi shnei edim o al pi shlosha edim yakum davar. The matter will be upheld via two witnesses or via three witnesses. Either way, whichever prosek you bring, the point is, the text says a set of two witnesses or a set of three witnesses. And what the Mishnah wants to understand is, why did you say two witnesses or three witnesses? If two witnesses makes a set, just say two witnesses. And not only that, but it says two or three, and it repeats the word edim. Shnayim edim, shlosha edim. Why did you repeat that? Just say, Shnayim o shlosha edim. Two or three witnesses. Not two witnesses or three witnesses. So we have two questions, right? Why did you say two and then say three? And why did you repeat the word witnesses? That's what the Mishnah wants to know. So we are going to get multiple approaches here, which I gave you on the sheet a list of the opinions just to help make it more clear. Mishnah says, Im miskayemes ha'edus b'shnayim l'maparat ha'kasu b'shlosha. If the testimony is upheld just by having two witnesses, why did the text say three? Ella, rather, here's the Tanakhama, opening view. Lahakish, shnayim l'shlosha, you have shlosha l'shnayim in parentheses, to link two and three, to say, ma shlosha mazimin es hashnayim, af hashnayim yazimu es hashlosha. Umenayin afilu mea, tamalomar edim. Tanakhama says, it's to teach me that the message is that when you have, it should say irrelevant on the sheet. It should say irrelevant on the sheet instead of relevant. It's saying that when I have two witnesses come along and say about this set of Edim, you were with me at the time. It doesn't matter whether it's two versus two, or two versus three, or two even versus 100. It doesn't make a difference. Yeah. The previous case we talked about, the Istitis case, was the case in which there were two witnesses, and then there were a whole bunch of sets of witnesses they were making into Zomamin. Now what we're saying is, you have two people, and you have 100 people. And the 100 people are testifying, and the two say about all of them, you were with us when you say this happened. We're willing to throw out the entire set of 100 on the word of these two witnesses. That's the Tanakhama. I don't care about the imbalance in size between the sets. It doesn't matter if it's two, it doesn't matter if it's three, it doesn't matter any number of edim. That's the Tanakhama. Clear? Got it?
Does that work also for just impeaching testimony?
No, we're not dealing with impeaching, only Zomamin. It may work for that also.
Two could lose to a three.
The difference is that when you're talking about impeaching testimony, normally it's about self-contradiction. The witnesses in their own set, not another group coming along. So that's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shimon comes up with a different approach. Rabbi Shimon says no. Ma shnayim eina neherogin ad sheyiyu shneim zomamin, af shlosha eina neherogin ad sheyiyu shloshtan zomamin. Uminayin afilu meya, tamad lomar, edim. Rabbi Shimon says this is a leniency. it says to me that just like we said, that if you have a set of two witnesses, you don't kill them as Zomamin unless both of them are Zomamin. Let's say you have three witnesses and only two of them are found to be Zomamin. What would I do? Before you see Rabbi Shimon, before we talk through Rabbi Shimon, what logically would you have said? You're using your Kal V'chomer now, right? You're using your Min Hadin. I'm going to decide. If three witnesses show up in Beis Din to get somebody killed, two of them turn out to be Zomamin, not the third. What do I do? Logically.
You still got two.
The other testimony for sure.
No, but you should execute two of them.
Yeah, I should execute the two Zomamin. They could have gotten this guy killed on their own. Happens to be there's a third guy in their set, but why should that save them from disaster? Says Rabbi Shimon, he saves them from disaster. Yep. If however many witnesses are in a set, and we have to define what is a set, but however many witnesses are in a set, automatically, they only get executed if the whole set becomes Zomamin. Otherwise, we're not doing it. Clear? That's Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon understands this to be a leniency. We expand it to say a set is a set, whether it's 2, 3, or 100. Along comes Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says, that's nice. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Lo bar hashlishi lahakel el lahachmir ola velazos dino kayotze bo'elu. Rabbi Akiva says, no. The reason why we mention the third is to go the other way. The reason why we mention the third is to say we're going to be strict, not lenient, to say that this third guy saves the other two. Just the opposite. A third guy joins with the other two. You know what?
He goes with
him. Is going to get the punishment also.
But he wasn't there. He wasn't Zomin.
What do you mean he wasn't Zomin? No, what,
the two of them, so, two out of the three so, were Zomin. Right.
So there are two ways to understand. Hang on.
Witnesses Ira. Can't say you were with us.
Hang on.
Because he wasn't.
There are two ways to understand what Rabbi Akiva is saying. It's Machlokas Rashi and the Ritva. Rashi believes that Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Shimon in terms of the law. He just doesn't think that it's learned from this pasuk. He thinks it's obvious. He agrees. If you have a set of three, they all need to be Zomamin in order to get executed. Then what's Rabbi Akiva saying here? Rabbi Akiva is saying something different. Let's say you have a set of three witnesses, and all three of them become Zomamin. Okay? They testified in order. Okay? Reuven, Shimon, and Levi testified in order. Reuven became a Zomim, Shimon became a Zomim, Levi became a Zomim. The Beis Din says, ha, we're going to execute all of you. Levi says, why me? They didn't even need me. These are your bad guys. I was third. Chronologically, I was third. So therefore, you didn't... I'm just a bystander who happened to get dragged into something I shouldn't have been involved with, but don't kill me. That's this guy's argument. And Rashi says, that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Rabbi Akiva is saying, it doesn't work that way. You became part of the set, you get executed. The Ritva says that Rabbi Akiva doesn't think that. Rabbi Akiva believes that, because that would be a leniency, the first approach of Rabbi Shimon is a leniency. Right. Rabbi Akiva doesn't think that. Rabbi Akiva thinks that if you have a set of three witnesses and only two of them become Zomamin, we execute the two. And he also believes that if you have a set of three witnesses and all three become Zomamin, we execute all three. Rabbi Akiva is never going to use this for a leniency. In Rabbi Akiva's court, they're all dead. That's the... Well, not really.
As long as they're all Zomim.
Right. Well, sort of. We're going to get to that. Not so clear. Hang in there. But that's the message that Rabbi Akiva is bringing. Now, what will Rabbi Shimon say should be done in the event that the third witness says, well, I wasn't necessary to this? Will we still execute him? So the Ritva says, I think Rabbi Shimon will agree with Rabbi Akiva.
He's guilty.
I think so, he says, but maybe not because of a case that we're going to see. Hang in there. We have more to see here that's going to be fascinating. Take a look. Go further in the Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva has an editorial comment. Rabbi Akiva says, four lines up from the bottom, the imkein onash hakasov lenitfa laovrei avera kaovrei avera. You see here that the pasuk punishes somebody who joined with sinners like the sinners themselves, right? We're punishing witness number three like we're punishing the first two. So he says, Al achas kama v'kama yishalim sachar lenitfa la'osei mitzvah ka'osei mitzvah. How much more so Hashem will reward people who join those who are doing mitzvos, just like he rewards those who are doing the mitzvos. If Hashem is going to reward the people who join the bad people, how much more so he's going to reward the people who join the good people? Why do you say that how much more so? So Rashi explains it. If you take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah, he says, the Alachas Kama V'Kama, the last thin line, Shematzinu Mida HaTova Meruba Midas HaPuranus, because we find that Hashem's reward is greater than his punishing. B'mida tova hu omer, regarding good things, he says, notzer chesed lo alafim. He guards chesed for thousands, meaning thousands of generations. Whereas b'midas puranus, regarding punishment, to omer al shilei shim val yubayim, he only says he's punishing the third and fourth generation. So Hashem rewards more than Hashem punishes. So if we're going to punish the guy, we're going to zap the guy who just joined in with the bad people, we're certainly going to reward the one who joined with the good people. Okay? That's the line in the Mishnah in Rabbi Akiva. That line made no sense. However, we're going to read the next bit of the Mishnah because I want to finish the Mishnah, and then I'm going to come back to explain what the Mishnah actually should have said. Or not. Maybe we should just do that. I don't know. That's a fun line to explain. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to take that line rather than go ahead in the Mishnah and then come back to the rest of the Mishnah next time. Here's why it makes no sense. You've given me the case as the guy who joined in is the third witness, right? I had three witnesses. They all testified about this guy. They all became Zomamin. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, we punish the third guy, even though he wasn't necessary to the case. So we call him the guy who joined the sinners. But Ira, is he really the guy who joined the sinners? You asked me before. He's just as bad as they are. He happened to luck out by being number three.
He could have been one.
What do you mean he joined the sinners? He didn't join the sinners. He is a sinner. Why are we calling him Nitfal, the guy who joined the sinners? That's what bothers the Rishonim on this Mishnah, and they offer two answers. The Nemuke Yosef quotes the Ritz Gaius, Rabbi Yitzchak Ibn Gaius, and I brought it for you in Source Dalet, but I think because of time, I'm not going to read it inside. If that's okay, we're good. Okay, so he gives a very interesting answer. He says it must be that this guy did not actually testify. You had three people in the set; two of them became Zolomon. The third guy never testified, and Rabbi Akiva is saying execute him anyway because he joined in with the sinners. You joined in with these Zomamin. Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheino, pal. That's it. You're gone.
But he never testified. How are you an aide if you don't testify? You declare yourself part of the group without saying anything?
He declared himself in the group. He was ready to testify. It just didn't happen.
He didn't commit the act, but he conspired to commit the act.
And you knew what he was going to say?
We know nothing. We do not know.
So we're executing on the I don't know?
So that's the Chidushei Harim. The Chidushei Harim says, really? That's in source Hey. He says, but Tamua Ma'ot Shlo Hey Yid Sheker Ech Yischayev. He says, I'm shocked. This guy didn't do anything. He didn't testify falsely. Why are we executing him? Says the Chidushei Harim. So he says, I'll tell you what he did wrong. We're going to see in the Gemara, we're not there yet, that a set, by definition, is witnesses who saw not only the event, but they saw each other. If the witnesses didn't see each other during the event, they can't be a set. It doesn't work. So you can imagine a case, there's a shooting that goes on down on the street, and there's one person who sees it from a building from one angle, somebody else sees it from a different building from a different angle. They don't see each other. They're not a set. If those are the only two witnesses, this guy's not going to get punished. So that means, in order for them to be a set, this guy was saying, you were there on the scene with me. Which they weren't, because there's Omamin. So it's true that he never testified. However, he did, just by dint of being part of the set, he was making a statement, and that's enough to make him a part of the group. that's the Chiddushei HaRim's answer to justify what the Ritz Gaius read as Rabbi Akiva's position. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, we're punishing the guy. He didn't do the full testimony, but he did something. That's one answer. The other is the Ritva. And he says, Rabbi Akiva is saying, he's addressing the topic of Toch Kedei Dibur. Toch Kedei Dibur means when you speak within a few seconds of the person who was before you. The rule is that Edim Zomamin become Edim Zomamin as a set where they testify within a few seconds of each other. And what Rabbi Akiva is saying, according to the Ritva, is the third guy came in after they were finished speaking. So he wasn't really part of the set. They presented their testimony. Then a minute elapsed, and then he walked up and he gave his testimony. So therefore, he really shouldn't count as part of the set. And yet, Rabbi Akiva said, too bad. We're going to execute him anyway. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky is very bothered by that for the same reason that the Chiddushei HaRim was bothered by the previous answer. He said, but the guy's not supposed to get the death penalty then. Then why are you doing that? He's not really part of the set. But he points out, it's in Sur Zayin, that in Avos Rabbi Nasan, that Rabbi Akiva actually said this explicitly, that we would execute the guy who came in and testified, Achar Kedei Dibur, after that time had elapsed. So he's really just somebody who joined the Avera, but he's not actually somebody who did the Avera. So, taking all of this back to the... What I said before, what is it that Rabbi Shimon is thinking here? When Rabbi Shimon says that we're going to use the 2 and 3 in order to be lenient, right? He said we use the fact that it mentions the third to be lenient and say that in the event that two of them are found guilty, but not the third, we're not going to execute anybody. It has to be the entire set. What will he think of Rabbi Akiva's statement that we punish the third guy even though he's not necessary? He will agree with that statement only where all three actually did the crime. Where all three testified within Kedei Dibur and all that, that's where Rabbi Shimon will agree. But not with Rabbi Akiva's added statement about the guy who testified later or the guy who never testified. That Rabbi Shimon is not good with. That's Rabbi Akiva's novelty. I hope that was somewhat clear. I wasn't too clear because then you'd say, like, well, I need this guy. But it was somewhat clear at least. So what we'll have to do is next time we'll come back and do the end of the Mishnah, which is another statement from Rabbi Akiva, and go from there. God willing. Okay? Oh, wow, I stopped short. That's like 42 minutes. Yeah, you asked the question.
3 minutes. And what I wanted to know was, what if you had a group of three?
Yeah.
And one was, well, you can't say Zomain because you need two for the group, but he, Zomain kind of case, right?
What do you mean?
One was proven to be not at the scene, you were with us,
yeah.
Whatever.
Are
the other two still mitzarek
meaning the Mazimin.
Does the one that was false disqualify everybody?
Right. So the Mazimin only said to one of them, Imanu Hayisa. They didn't say it to the others. The others, as part of their testimony, were saying, we were with you. Because otherwise they wouldn't be a set.
Right.
So according to what we just said from the Chiddushei HaRim, they're disqualified. Chiddushei HaRim would disqualify them. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
That would say no, that uphold the two that are left.
We can't.
Because they included.
They're gone. Yeah, they're gone. Shkayach. Thank you.